are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil Hewlett. I thank you for tuning in. This is the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. On today's show, once and for all, is fracking causing earthquakes? Geophysicists have taken a hard look, and we speak with one of them. Plus, whether you're a buyer or a seller, the springtime real estate market is heating up. We speak with an expert who has tips for you. And also, is Bruce Jenner ready to show off his girlish figure? And can you wait to see? Let's meet the friends. She has her hands on the wheel, her eyes on the road. It's Erin Myers.
Yes, hello. And there is something that you could be doing behind the wheel that is just as dangerous as a DUI. And it could be affecting you right now. I'll tell you what it is.
He's not taking any guff from you or your friends. Say hello to Chris Martin.
Phil, we have a runaway candidate for hashtag Mother of the Year. And this time it's for all the right reasons.
Oh, good. So it's not you're not being facetious.
No.
All right. Nice.
Mainly because I don't know what that means.
Good. We love you just the way you are, Chris. Stay that way, please.
Yes.
All right, let's get things rolling. We're going to drive while something. Not intoxicated.
No.
Not drunk.
No.
But something just as dangerous.
Yes, and you wouldn't think it is, but yeah, driving while dehydrated,
what?
Apparently. Yeah.
I'm drinking water now just
yes,
to make sure.
You have a long trip home, so make sure you are hydrated before you get in the car, because there was a study recently done by the Journal of Physiology and Behavior, and they have
Love
found
that
out. It's a good one, right?
Yeah.
I enjoy it when I'm need my downtime. But they found out that it's just as dangerous to be dehydrated while driving as it is to be drunk while driving.
Any idea what the telltale signs of dehydration are? Because I suspect a lot of us are mid-range or
you're
all
thirsty.
The way.
I think that's the first sign.
But maybe there are other things.
They said that what they noticed was that there were headaches, lethargy, a fuzzy feeling, all things that are very similar. And they did find out that people who were driving while dehydrated, they were doing things like lane drifting, late braking, riding along the lane in the middle with the bumps.
Yeah.
And they said that they tested it twice, when you're not dehydrated and when you are dehydrated, and the number of incidents went up more than double.
Really?
Yes. So drink your water if you're going on a long trip. You might have to stop and take a break, but it's better.
You know those symptoms that you mentioned, the fuzziness and the, what else was it, the lethargy?
I
wonder how many people have those every day of their life and just assume, well, this is what I'm like. This is just me. I'm just this way. And just a couple of extra glasses of water might turn you into a completely different person.
They say that it affects reaction time and focus as well, and concentration, and it can even affect our mood if we're dehydrated.
So drink a glass of water, will you?
Mm-hmm. Or more. And I think a lot of people are drinking things that are diuretics, which remove water from your system.
Coffee?
Coffee, tea? Soda. Alcohol is also
especially
in that category.
Especially on a long trip or something.
Right, and you wouldn't do that by driving. But somebody once gave me a great analogy about what water does for your body and why it's a good idea to increase your water intake. If you think of your body, which is sort of electrical, like a battery, you need to keep it hydrated for all these electric currents to continue to communicate with each other properly. Otherwise, you got a dry battery, and the next thing you know, you're in a ditch.
Yeah, all right. So if you're
careful.
If you're having
a
conversation with somebody, and they're clearly being ridiculously stupid, offer them a glass of water and see if things don't brighten up.
It might help. Yeah. It actually might help.
All right, good. Now let's see what else do we have. Oh, you know what else helps? There's nothing to brighten up the day. Either at the beginning of the day or the end of the day or the middle of the day. You pick a time. It doesn't matter when. A couple of scoops of ice cream.
Yes.
Am I right?
It's a great thing, ice cream. I mean, it makes you much happier. And it can help with hydration, too, I think, because of the dairy.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've heard of Cold Stone Creamery where you can, like, go mix in your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now there's Cold Stoned. So apparently,
cold stoned.
Yes, there is a cannabis creamery based in California. It's an ice cream factory, and they are putting marijuana into ice cream. And they have flavors like mint chip and banana split, and like a bear claw ice cream sandwich.
Yeah,
and apparently they're quite tasty. You have to get these in places that it's legal.
They have any funny names like Ben and Jerry's names?
They don't, at least not in the article I'm reading, but I think that would be a good idea for when you're like putting it on the market.
Like Bon Appetit?
Oh, well, that's actually a munchie show.
Yeah.
Bon Appetit. But I think that's very funny. Yes. But they do say if you are going to partake in cannabis ice cream, you must be careful because it actually hits you faster because it takes less time to digest.
Talk about your brain freeze.
Mm-hmm.
All these edibles have to be great for stoners, though, because you're accomplishing two things at once. You know, you're getting stoned and curing the munchies all at the same time.
And a treat.
Yeah.
And now there are all these tasty treats, like delicious brownies.
Just think of all the hippies in their 20s, you know, in the 1960s, who were smoking pot back then, and now they're like in their 90s. I'm not doing the math properly necessarily, but they're old. They're old folks.
They're older.
They're seeing this in their lifetime, but they're not in a place in their life where they can enjoy the lifestyle that perhaps they dreamed about back in the 1960s when they were full of that idealism.
I think my grandma would really like marijuana ice cream,
you think
personally.
So? Yeah?
I think she'd be funny to watch eat it.
Your grandma's a stoner?
No, I'm not saying that.
I don't think there was as much restriction back in the 60s and 70s as you might be remembering.
No, there was none, really. Yeah. You could buy LSD at your local pharmacist until it was outlawed. So there was quite a bit of difference, but they didn't have all these other things.
Yeah.
Oh, right,
And by the time you got to Woodstock, then all of a sudden people started clamping down. It's early 70s, and whatever it was, if it was a drug, and you, well, first of all, what you may not remember about the 60s and early 70s is society didn't like hippies didn't like anybody with long hair, didn't like rock and roll music. Society didn't. You didn't hear music in commercials on television, popular music, until the 1980s.
Hmm.
It was not mainstream. Everything was underground and not, you know, rebellious. It took a long time for all of this to become mainstream. Well, it took for the hippies to grow up and become the
responsible adults.
Yes, exactly. Take over the
find a different way to go
take
about
over
it.
The pillars of industry.
Yes.
Yeah. There we go. All right. So one more thing. There's a takeover of a different sort in Baltimore. It's kind of a sad situation. This all comes from that shooting of a young man. What was his name?
Freddie Gray.
Freddie Gray. Right. What's the update on that, Aaron? What's going on in Baltimore?
Well, they did have all the rioting and looting yesterday, and things were a little calmer this morning, but the National Guard had to come in, and they are all over the town trying to keep things in order. And there's actually a curfew as well from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. And we do know that volunteers have also been coming out now and cleaning up the streets because it was a mess. I know that the about 144 vehicles were set on fire, and there were 15 structure fires and almost 200 people arrested and actual officers sent to the hospital as well. So a lot going on, and they are still scared that this could happen again and that, you know, could happen in other towns too. So everybody kind of on edge and on watch right now.
Yeah, not cool to see the images and what's going down over there. It's a very violent situation, which is unfortunate because how are you going to counteract violence with more violence?
Yeah,
it seems counterintuitive.
It doesn't make any sense, but it seems to happen over and over again. And we do, related to that, have a story of a woman in Baltimore who just put her foot down about this violence, and wait until you hear who she put her foot down upon. That's next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
How do you stop a killer who won't stay dead? When you mix high-tech medical science with a psychotic killer, you get Immortal Fear, a medical thriller by H.S. Clark. This book has been described as heart-pounding, captivating, provocative, a modern high-tech version of Frankenstein that explores the line between life and death. Full over-the-top action and adventure with vivid storytelling, Immortal Fear is a fast-paced page-turner. I love thrillers, and this book was amazing. I could not put it down, and neither will you. It is riveting, completely engaging, and will have you on the edge of your seat. This is from the best-selling Dr. Paul Power series, which is top-rated on Amazon and is highly recommended for anyone who likes mysteries and thrillers. This is a clever whodunit that is brilliantly written. The ebook is available at Amazon. Immortal Fear, Immortal, a medical thriller by H.S. Clark.
Do Thanks for tuning in. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends. We have a website. Just add the .com after the name of the show, and you're there. And you can subscribe to the show. There's an RSS feed on the website. And then you'll never miss a single one. And if you like just getting it in your email box, you'll see on the right column there, it says very obviously, never miss a show, something to that effect. You just fill in your email address and click the little button, and you're good to go.
And how much does it cost me, Phil?
Absolutely nothing.
What?
Absolutely nothing. And one thing that we should do, and by the way, that's the voice of Chris Martin there. Aaron Myers is here as well. And always a pleasure to have you two in the studio here. And to have you there on the other side of the headphones listening to the program. The just a point of clarification, the guy, Freddie Gray, who died in this Baltimore situation, a dude with a long rap sheet, was roughed up pretty badly by police and thrown in a paddy wagon or an ambulance, we're not sure which, and then taken to the hospital where he died from injuries to his voice box and his neck. So it sounds like he had a broken neck. Either had one before he was put into the paddy wagon, or it happened while he was in the paddy wagon. And so that's the there are several legal issues or discussion points about that. Ultimately, the community feels like it has been wronged, and so thus the rioting. Can never understand why that happens necessarily, but there's some follow-up stories to that, including a couple of the notorious gangs in the neighborhood are banding together to they're having a truce while this is going on.
So. Yeah, that's what they're saying. They're all joining together to help each other out.
I can't tell you if this Freddie Gray character was a gang member himself. I don't know that for a fact, but just the same. There is an interesting story that, Chris, you uncovered that perhaps you're not the only one to know about it. Sounds like something that might go viral. Tell us about this mom in Baltimore.
Yeah, go viral or already has. We're able to sit on our couches and watch the coverage of a lot of this stuff unfolding over in Baltimore. And one mother was sitting on the couch watching it when she saw her son at the Baltimore riots throwing rocks at police officers. Mm. So she jumped in her car and she went down there to where the demonstration was and she confronted her son. And this guy, young man, he's dressed up like a lot of them. He's got sort of a ski mask on. It looks almost like a ninja outfit, all black clothing as well. And she ran up to him and slapped him in the way only a mother can slap a son.
Wow.
Okay.
Several times, you know, but in that motherly, hey, what are you doing? What are you doing type of way? You know,
good
she even
her.
Yelled at him. She goes, take that bleeping mask off. What are you doing this dumb bleep for?
Yeah.
You can hear that on the video, so check it out if you want, because she this video that she's in has gone viral with the Twitter hashtag Mother of the Year. She did it in front of everybody, all the other protesters. He looks embarrassed, but at the same time, you can tell it's his mother, and there's nothing he can do. He's just sort of like, come on, Mom.
Yeah.
And then she shoves him over to the car and gets him out of there.
That would have been awesome if she, like, dragged him by his ear back to the car. That would have been great.
It was sort of like that. It was, you know, back
Mom
of the head.
Good
for her. I think she should have. That's all. But if she did enough, that's good. I know they were asking people to come out and, like, take their kids home, and she did a good job of that.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, the cops are actually taking this video as something that they can put out there and say, look, all you parents, why don't you come down here and grab your kids and take them home?
The latest community policing video, right?
Moms, take your sons and daughters inside.
Yeah. All right. Let's run with this. I don't know. Rumor has it that Bruce Jenner wants to show off his increasingly feminine figure in a naughty photo shoot.
You know what would be interesting about that is I think a lot of women will see it and go, man, he looks great, or he's still going by he.
Yeah.
That's what he said, but like...
Until the transition
is
complete.
Yeah, and then he's going to look better than a lot of women out there, and we're all going to be hurt.
This is coming from radaronline.com. A so-called insider told folks over there, now that the Diane Sawyer interview is done, he'll be much more vocal about his new identity, and he wants to show the world how proud he is of his new body. Supposedly, he's looking for a top-quality photographer for a risque yet sophisticated portrait. The source adds, quote, he's still working out the details, but definitely wants this to happen. He's getting more and more confident with his sexuality, perhaps taking note of some of the career moves of Kim Kardashian.
Well, he was a part of those career moves, too.
Did she ask him?
She was his father, her father, in a sense.
That stylish, oiled-up, naked shoot that she did recently?
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, did she ask him first?
I think that was Momager who approved that one.
Yeah. Momager?
Yeah.
Yeah. She, Bruce, by the way, did a shirtless cover shoot for Playgirl back in 1982. Did you know that?
I do now.
Yeah. Now, he's 65 years old. And we may just see more of Bruce than we ever thought we would.
He looked very good in his interview that he did. So
yeah, and he held himself well.
Yes.
He spoke about it in a very matter-of-fact way. They didn't make a circus out of it. Mm-mm. 17-point-something million people tuned into it. So there's obviously an attraction to learning more about the subject.
Yeah, we had it on at the Hewlett House, and I thought the interview was well done. And there was nothing... I didn't think too weird about
Mm-mm.
it.
Mm-mm. Well, hopefully he's helping other people. So that's the main thing out of that, I think.
Yeah, yeah. How about that? All right. Well, not everybody gets along on this planet. Not everybody's friends, like here on The Friends.
No.
But and it dawned on me that there was a popular TV show that had a name similar to ours, because this is Phil Hewlett and Friends. And there was a show on TV called Friends. Do you recall there was a show called Friends?
Mm-hmm.
There was one.
There was?
Yeah.
Was it popular?
I don't know.
Did anybody watch it?
It was about Friends.
Sometimes, I think. Every once in a while, people would check it out.
Well,
no one got famous off of it or anything.
Nobody did?
No.
All right. Well, who was in it and who's talking about it these days?
Courtney Cox was in it, and she's been talking about it. She was on David Letterman on Monday, and she said, you know, it's been off since 2004, and people have been like, where's the reunion? Why aren't they getting back together? We need to see this. Well, apparently she said that, you know, they've tried for cast dinners and things like that, but they never can get all of them in the same place. And last time, apparently, it was Matt LeBlanc who canceled, but now she's saying that somebody else is the one who is kind of making it difficult for this to happen.
Can I guess?
Yeah, guess.
I'm going to guess Jennifer Aniston.
No, it's not.
Can I take a guess?
Yes.
It's the monkey. That little monkey?
Is he holding out?
He's got ego, I've heard. Yeah. I do think there's ego there, but nope, not the monkey. It's actually, supposedly, she didn't officially go, yes, it's so-and-so, but hinted that it might be David Schwimmer, of all people.
Schwimmer?
Yes.
What's his deal?
I don't know, maybe.
He's got something
else
going on?
Angry about something, or busy, yeah. They weren't really friends.
Angry and busy.
Or contract holdouts. Remember, they were the first season of television series that were making $1 million a piece an episode.
Yeah. How about that?
An episode.
I hope some of them banked that away, because outside of Jennifer Aniston, I mean, Courtney Cox has done all right. She's had her own series.
Yeah.
And Matt LeBlanc has only just recently come
with
into his own.
Episodes, yeah.
Yeah, because he's had a lot of failures. And the other guys haven't really. Schwimmer's been in a couple of movies.
Yeah.
Hasn't he?
And then Matthew Perry now has The Odd Couple on. I don't know how it's doing, but he is doing that now. So.
All right. Let's see if that lasts more than a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. I've watched it a few times. I'm not so into it.
Yeah.
I think it's hard to do a remake and have it be successful.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, The Odd Couple. That's from back in the day.
Right. Yeah, but
yes,
there's a new one, though. There's a new one.
Odd Couple 2.0.
Gosh, Chris. Hey, you have some technology news for us.
I do.
Are we going to stop using gasoline, the kind of gasoline that we know today?
Eventually. Eventually, of course we will. It's technology is moving too fast for us not to. But German auto manufacturer Audi says that they've created diesel using nothing but air and water.
Really?
Yeah, pretty interesting, right?
So that's what goes into the Audi?
That's the ultimate in fuel evolution.
How do they do that?
I'm going to try to explain this.
Let's
see if we can keep this simple enough. They're calling it the fuel of the future, by the way. What they do is they use renewable energy and they convert carbon dioxide and water into a form of crude oil known as blue crude.
Mm-hmm.
That is then refined into diesel.
Wow.
Yeah, and so Audi is claiming that their e-diesel is carbon neutral and has virtually no impact to climate variations.
Oh.
The car runs quieter and produces much fewer pollutants. By much, we mean like micrograms compared to what is being produced by the fuels that we use now.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, how about that?
We couldn't use it here in Los Angeles and California because of our drought.
Yeah, there's
that
not
water.
Enough water.
Not
to
enough
go
water.
So that blue diesel or blue fuel, whatever they're going to call
it. Yeah, blue crude.
Would probably be $12-13 a gallon here.
It's not going to be cheap. The first person that's actually using this technology is the German minister. Yeah, he's using it himself.
Of course, because he can afford it because he's got everybody else's money.
He might get it for free.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You might there's a percentage of people out there who would jump at the chance to spend $12 a gallon because they want to feel like they're saving the planet.
Well, if you think about the fact that maybe it's going to be $12 a gallon for the research and development process, they're like the Pfizer of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, CO2 you can literally pull out of the air. Water, pretty abundant element.
Yep.
You get the manufacturing process down, it's going to be significantly cost nothing.
Yeah.
You know, or it could.
Significantly. Awesome.
Free diesel. That's the goal.
I was going to say significantly cheaper, but then I realized it could eventually be free.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to that.
Who
that could be
like
good.
Free. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. And you're using just air and water, you're the pollutants and all that good stuff that comes along with it.
While we're talking about cars, how about the top 10 car movies of all time? You ready for that?
Sure.
All right. Number 10, Taste of Cherry. That's an Iranian movie. Came out in 97 about a guy who drives around in his truck looking for someone to bury him after he kills himself. I never heard of it.
Doesn't sound like the name of a car movie.
Paul Walker and Steve Zahn in Joyride, 2001.
Oh, I saw that.
Fast Five, the fifth Fast and Furious movie, is number 8. Hmm. Duel, which I love, number 7. My kids were not so much into it. Steven Spielberg's directorial debut. Holy Motors. Number 6, never heard of that.
Uh-uh.
Collateral, with Tom Cruise and Jamie Foxx. Repo Man, Emilio Estevez. Two-Lane Backup, star James Taylor, Dennis Wilson from the Beach Boys, among others. The Road Warrior, saw that. Second of the Mad Max films. And Taxi Driver, number 1.
Where are the Herbie movies with the little bug?
Yeah.
Oh.
How about Bullet?
That list is too obscure.
It is. Absolutely too obscure. Hey, the weather's heating up, flowers are springing up, and something else is popping up with them. The for sale signs in front of homes in your neighborhood. We have spring real estate tips for buyers and sellers with the host of SiriusXM's The Reality of Real Estate. Next on Phil Hewlett and Friends. Thanks for tuning in. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends. And I don't know, do you own a house? Do you want to buy a house? Do you want to sell your house? It's the time of the year where all of that activity starts springing up. That's right, it's spring. And here to share her assessment of this season's real estate landscape. Don't be a cheapskate. Buy a house, will you? She's the host of SiriusXM Radio's The Reality of Real Estate, Jennifer Hammond. Hi, Jennifer. I think I might be able to carry on a conversation here without falling to pieces. Thanks for being here.
Hey, oh, it's my pleasure. And I definitely think people shouldn't be cheapskates and they should buy a house.
There you go.
It's a good investment. It has great tax benefits. And it's the season.
Yes.
It's the season to come out, look at the beautiful flowers blooming and buy a house.
Yes. And stuff doesn't break ever. And, you know, you can look at your landscaping and everything's wonderful. And anyway, so what's the traditional expectation for real estate in the springtime, Jennifer?
Well, the springtime is usually the hottest season of the year. And of course, it's partly because of the hibernation over the winter, which is one of the tips that I would tell anybody. If you're putting your house on the market, or if you put it on your house on the market when it was still snowing out, make sure you get rid of any of those pictures that still have snow or that show that your house has been on the market for more than, just the springtime.
Right, yeah. Are prices generally on the rise, or is that you kind of have to cut up the country section by section to see where the good spots are and the low spots are?
No, traditionally spring is the hottest market in almost any place you are. I'm actually originally from Key West, Florida, and still in Key West, it's still a very hot time in the market. You know, just like winter is hot down there, but still spring is a really, really hot time.
But when you say hot, are you saying it's hot for the seller because the prices are on the rise, or is it hot for the buyer because there are bargains out there?
It's hot for the seller because the prices are on the rise. And like in the Washington, D.C. market where I am, I'm actually licensed in Virginia, D.C. and Maryland. And all three of those jurisdictions are so totally different. Again, location, location, location. But like in Washington, D.C., we're having properties where people are putting 21 offers on one property.
No kidding.
And good for the seller.
And how about you? You go from Key West to that part of town where all the front doors are on the second floor, right?
Exactly. What happened?
Yes,
I
know it.
It's a completely different life, that's for sure.
They do that because of the snow for folks that don't live in a snowy place. Now, are the sellers generally more motivated to sell quickly in the spring, or do they just hold out because of all those offers they're getting?
I think they hold out. But it also depends on where you are in the country. And that question is very specific to where you are in the country because, you know, I have a lot of listeners, even of my radio show on Sirius XM, who are in Texas or they're up in the Detroit area or they're way out in Wyoming. And it's very different. The spring market is a hot market, meaning it's good for sellers. And if they've had it on the market, like I said before, for 3 months and all the way through the snow and finally it's melting, now is a time. But it's a lot slower depending on where you are in the United States.
Right. Now, interest rates remain very, very low, historically low. But that doesn't necessarily mean buyers can afford more house because it seems to me the high prices would cancel that out, right?
I was going to say it depends on what market you're in, because if you're in a bidding war, then it doesn't really matter at all. But one thing that is happening is that because the interest rates are so low, people are refinancing. I have people who bought 4 years ago who have now refinanced twice because the interest rates were so incredibly low. And even with, and there are a lot of loans out there with no closing costs refis.
Yeah.
And so you can get in and out very quickly. So it does motivate some buyers, but it depends on your market.
Yeah, really. I mean, you're looking at $425 for $100,000 these days, you know, a month if you're going to do a 30. So that's it's just spectacular when you think about where things were several years ago. Are more people graduating into the luxury market these days?
They are, because now, and I would say that also is location by location, because like even in the DC market, if you're in one of the areas that's really hot, then those people are finally getting to move up into the luxury market. And some people had been trapped there for a long time. They weren't able to move up into their next thing. Their interest rates were going down and they were getting paid more, but they couldn't sell their house for the amount that they bought it for. So motivating to get together and actually sell and buy up into a luxury market. Why would you do that if you're going to be upside down and have to possibly do a short sale?
Certainly. Yeah. All right. So if you know prices are at a point where you're going to have to compete with other buyers to buy a house, give us some tips if we're looking to buy right now.
So one of the things is do your home inspection. If you're the buyer and you want to compete, do your home inspection prior to making the offer. In other words, you know, most people, when they're competing, they're giving up all of their rights as a buyer, rights that protect them, meaning a home inspection contingency. And the contingency is what protects you so that if you find something that's really bad about the house, you can either walk away or you can negotiate with the seller. But when you're competing with 21 offers, you don't get that opportunity to be able to compete. So do your home inspection first so that you know what you're buying, and then you base the amount that you would offer, including a lot of them are also doing, here's another tip, an escalation clause. And that's different, again, depending on what market you're in, what's legal, what form you can use, whether it's, you know, up to a certain amount, if it's by $5,000 increments or $10,000, it's almost like a gambling game.
Yeah, based on what you find, right?
And based on what you find. And so you have to really be, you just really need to be knowledgeable. And hopefully, one of the other key tips to that is having a real estate agent who knows the market that you're making the offer in very well.
Yeah. Our friend here, Chris Martin's in the studio. He knows a thing or two about construction. I know that for a fact. But he's got a question for you. Jennifer?
I do, Jennifer. I have a question about the inspection tip that you gave us and having the home inspection done prior to making the offer. The way I figure it is, if the person's selling the house, they're probably still living in it. And are they going to allow every potential buyer that wants to go through there with their inspector and start going through their house before even hearing offers or knowing whether or not you're serious?
Hi, Chris. That is a great question. Yes. It's funny because in the DC market, we're finding that they will allow people. And what you'll find is that you might have 21 offers, but you might only have 3 people that are willing to fork out $500 or $1,000 to have a home inspector and spend the time. And they'll even let the 2 inspectors or 3 inspectors go through and do it. And you do have to make an appointment with the owner, but they'll do it all at the same time if they can coordinate it that way. And then all the offers are due Monday at 5 o'clock or whatever the deadline is. But everybody knows if you're going to do a home inspection or you're going to put money into it. And again, that might mean that 3 or 4 people do it, but only one person's winning this house. So you have to decide on how much money you're willing to invest, knowing that it might not be yours.
Yeah. How about some tips for the seller? I mean, unless you're unloading a money pit. selling a house and relocating, whether you choose to or it's just something that you're forced to do because of your job, selling your house tends to be more of an emotional thing than buying a house, I would think.
Yeah, well, I think it's emotional on both sides, but selling it, especially if you've been there for a very long time, one of the first things you want to do is remove all that clutter and all of your personal items, your personal photos, religious items, all of that stuff needs to be removed. And you probably heard that before, but it's so important that it is so neutral, you know, and even with your colors, paint, you know, make everything more neutral, make people feel very comfortable that they could see themselves living there. If your house is covered with all of your stuff, you need to remove that stuff, including one of the things we talked about recently on my show was that collections. Sometimes you might have parents that have raised 4 kids here and all the kids were in sports and they'll have collections and collections and collections of trophies and pictures of them winning awards and stuff. And unfortunately, you might want to keep one of those or 2 of those, but you don't keep 40,
yeah,
you know, on a set of shelves. You have
sense.
To make it more generic, you know?
Yeah, I do know. And listen to The Reality of Real Estate with Jennifer Hammond, Saturday mornings from 8 to 9 on Sirius XM, number 126. That's the channel there on Sirius XM. Check out our website as well, jenniferhammond.us. Jennifer, a pleasure to speak with you.
It was so much fun. Thank you so much.
Okay, talk to you again sometime. Now, the death toll from that earthquake in
Nepal
is 7.8. It's a magnitude, and the death toll has surpassed 5,000 by some accounts.
Wow.
Nepal's prime minister says he expects that number to hit 10,000 once the difficult process of digging through the rubble is completed, and is the case whenever disaster strikes somewhere in the world. The outpouring of generosity kicks in. You'll see when you log on to Facebook today, there's a donation button to help the survivors in Nepal and neighboring areas. The donations are going to the International Medical Corps, which is on the ground tending to the injured. And you can make a donation there, or you can simply get out your smartphone and text the word MED, M-E-D, to 80888, and $10 will be charged to your phone bill. Now, back here at home, a lot has been said in the news about hydraulic fracturing or fracking, and whether that process, which extracts oil and gas from underground shale deposits, causes earthquakes. And certainly there are areas of the country where earthquakes were rare until fracking, and now shakers come with increased frequency. But is fracking truly the culprit here? The U.S. Geological Survey took a hard look at this, and you'll hear from one of their experts about this topic next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing. A cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door. And the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. All right, it's Phil Hewlett and Friends. Thanks for tuning in. It's a simple question. Is fracking causing earthquakes? Well, the answer may not be a simple yes or no, but we'll see. U.S. Geological Survey released a report this week that digs deep, metaphorically speaking, into those wells beneath the shale deposits for some answers. And joining us live is Dr. Elizabeth Cochran, a research geophysicist with the U.S. Geological Survey at Caltech. Dr. Cochran, hello.
Hello.
How about a little background first? We know there's been a sharp increase in seismic activity in parts of the country where they're not well known for earthquakes. Remind us where these areas are and when did the spike in shaking begin?
Sure. So we've seen a large increase in earthquake activity across several states, mostly in the central and eastern U.S. These include Alabama, Arkansas, Colorado, Kansas, New Mexico, Ohio, Oklahoma and Texas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, places where you might expect more conversation about tornadoes than
that's
earthquakes.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, give us an idea how much of an increase in seismic activity there's been, and are we talking earthquakes of significant magnitude or just the equivalent of a bread truck driving by?
Well, it really depends. How much of an increase depends on where you're talking about. In some places, we see just pulses of increased activity. However, in the extreme cases in Oklahoma and southern Kansas, we've seen an exponential growth in earthquakes occurring there, where now the rate of earthquakes is about 300 times higher what it was prior to about 2009.
300 times?
That's right. Yeah. They now have more earthquakes in Oklahoma than we have here in California.
Oh, are you kidding me? And if you look at the earthquake map, I mean, there's one happening every half hour or so.
Yeah. So I believe the number is about 2 magnitude 3 or larger earthquakes every day, where it used to be 2 magnitude 3 or larger earthquakes every year in Oklahoma.
Right.
And these aren't just the relatively small magnitude 3, 3.5. Back in 2011, there was a magnitude 5.6 in a small town called Prague, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And so that obviously caused some damage to buildings in that area. Luckily, it was relatively sparsely populated, however. Yeah.
Incidentally, we have a link to the USGS report on our links page under the letter F for fracking. You will see it there clearly stated. And so we're talking about the relationship between fracking and earthquakes, but how does fracking work exactly, and why would it cause an earthquake?
Yeah, so the fracking process, or hydraulic fracturing, is when fluid is pumped down into the ground with the express purpose of actually causing fractures, generally relatively small fractures, and this opens up an area and allows more oil to be produced from a given oil play. I will note, however, that a lot of the increase in earthquakes we're seeing is not actually related to hydraulic fracturing alone. Most of the increase in earthquakes has been seen near what are called deep wastewater injection wells. And so whenever you produce oil, you not only pull out oil out of the ground, you pull out a lot of other fluids. And these fluids need to be disposed of. And so often what happens is the fluids are pumped back into ground via these deep injection wells. And so what we've seen is that while hydraulic fracturing can cause some earthquakes, they tend to be quite small, magnitudes 1s and 2s. I believe in Canada they've had as large as about a magnitude 4 event directly caused by hydraulic fracturing. However, most of the increases in seismicity we believe that we've seen in the central and eastern U.S. has been due to these very large wastewater injections.
And that process has been around longer than fracking, has it?
Yeah, so that's been around for a long time. Part of the reason we think in, for example, Oklahoma, we've seen a large increase in earthquakes is because the volume of water being injected has increased significantly. And that's because the oil is being produced from what are called dewatering plays. And this is where the volume of water or fluids that's pulled out of the ground relative to the volume of oil is very high. So you have lots and lots of this wastewater that needs to be disposed of for every barrel of oil that you generate.
Yeah, there are oil wells and oil operations throughout the country. We're in California. There is a ton of it here. We're in the Los Angeles Harbor, and over on the Long Beach Harbor side, there's quite a bit of operation. And I know the rules are whatever they take out, they've got to fill that area back up with some other kind of fluid. I mean, it's just part of the oil well process. But what you described as causing earthquakes, has that been happening in California and other states beside Oklahoma and the areas that are seeing increases now? Has that been basically the standard operation for as long as we can remember across the country?
Right. Well, in the case of, for example, Oklahoma, the deep injection wells are actually injecting wastewater from multiple producing wells. So it ends up, in some cases, not being a one-to-one, what's taken out is reinjected. However, you're right, here in California, or at least from what I know in the Los Angeles basin, typically what is produced out of the Los Angeles basin, they then have injection wells to to inject the same volume of fluids underground. And the reason that's done in Los Angeles is because back in the 30s, there was quite a lot of subsidence due to oil production. So subsidence is where the ground actually subsides downwards. Because you're pulling large volumes of fluids out of the ground.
Yeah, and that's bad for real estate values.
Right, exactly. So, since that time, the Los Angeles regional producers have done a good job of balancing what comes out is what goes back in.
Okay, so the conclusion is then that, yes, fracking causes earthquakes, but so does this other process.
Yes.
Other human-caused elements. And is there also another element of a natural geological transition on this planet?
I guess I'm not sure what you mean by
that. I'm not a scientist, so I'm just making up phrases. But I'm just thinking along the timeline of Earth's life in this solar system, I just wonder if there's a percentage of the activity just as a part of the normal evolution of what's happening on this planet.
Well, certainly there's a lot of naturally occurring earthquakes that we have in California because we're located on a plate tectonic boundary. The reason we don't typically see as many events in the central and eastern U.S. Is because that area is not located on a plate boundary where we expect lots of earthquakes to happen.
Yeah. All right. I just wonder if we're greasing the machine a little bit with some of our man-made causes here, since we're waiting around in California and other places for the big one to hit. Are we increasing our chances of that happening in our lifetime?
Well, you know, that's really an open question. There have historically been some suggestions of very large earthquakes that have been triggered by man-made activities. For example, when reservoirs are filled, earthquakes as large as magnitude 6 or 7 have been triggered by that process. And in 1984, there was a magnitude 7 earthquake in Uzbekistan, which was thought to be triggered by gas withdrawal, or at least one study pointed to that
mm-hmm.
connection.
Yeah.
And in fact, if I don't know if your listeners remember the 2008 magnitude 7.9 earthquake in China, the Wenchuan earthquake. That was a very devastating earthquake, and a number of studies have suggested that that could have also been potentially triggered by also filling of a reservoir.
Yeah. All right. Well, it sure sounds like the seismic hazard map has included a lot more places in this country than it used to be. And thanks for the good work you're doing over there at the USGS. We always look to you and to Caltech for anything scientific that has to do with the terra we're standing on. And thanks for your information today, Dr. Elizabeth Cochran.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. You're welcome. And again, the report is available on our links page. Just go down to the letter F. You'll see the fracking and earthquake report from the USGS, and it's not a difficult read. Hey, that's it for hour one of the program. There's more to come, including evidence of just how delusional men are about women. And ladies, now you can continue to be intimate with your dearly departed husband. And we have real good reason to think twice before you buy tuna. Oh, and our travel guy, he's more or less been living at airports for the last 2 months. And he has a report for you that you will not believe. Those stories and more coming up in the second hour of Phil Hewlett and Friends. Next!
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553.
You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. This is hour two of the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. This hour, are the Clippers poised to pull off a major upset against the champions? Here's a question for you. Do men have PMS? And admit it, ladies, you've stolen something out of somebody's medicine cabinet. The friends are here. What was that face? Aaron Myers?
We do not steal. No.
You borrow.
And that's Chris Martin
maybe.
Right there. I'm Phil Hewlett. Thanks for tuning in. All of that will be revealed to you this hour, and we're so glad you tuned in. All right, but Aaron, cool it, will you?
Oh.
Get all hopped up.
Yes.
All right, that's fine.
Anger issues.
Do you?
No.
Do we have to check you in?
Maybe.
All right.
I need now, anger management.
You know, sometimes music calms the savage beast.
It does.
And what's this guy? What does he do for a living?
Well, let's listen to it first and you guess, because it's pretty cool.
I love the acoustics in whatever it is he's in.
The shower. No.
That's not the shower?
No, not the shower. But what do you guys think? It could be pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Opera. That's hard to sing.
Yeah.
So,
I'm at a restaurant and I'm eating pasta and this is when he comes up?
No, but that is a good guess. He is an Uber driver in Boston, Massachusetts. And he was had a guy in his car and he was taking him around and they videotaped him singing and, quite talented. So now you can get a ride and a show with some nice music.
All right.
I think that's pretty great. There's talented people everywhere.
Do you get that whether you want it or not?
Probably. But hey, I guess.
Oh, great. I got the singing Uber guy.
Yes. But I think he's very good voice. Very good voice.
It was good. Mm-hmm. That was very nice.
It was nice.
He was singing along. You can kind of hear. He had a recording playing, and he was singing along with the recording.
But at least it wasn't like, oh, that would be me if I was singing to you opera in the car.
It was nothing like that.
Oh, great. I got the bad singing Uber driver.
See, that's what you have to think about. You could get that one, which I'm sure those exist too.
Oh, gosh.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, it's enough to send you over the edge and at least give you a mood shift. Or a swing of some sort. And ladies, you deal with things monthly. And guys, we notice that sometimes we've got to, couch a question a little differently than some other time of the month.
Mm-hmm.
But just the same, how about us men?
Well,
we're pretty even-keeled, aren't we?
Ha. Ha. That's what you think, apparently. Because, so girls, yes, they say we get PMS, or some of us, every, 28 days, and we might get a little testy. I don't think it's that bad, but we get a bad rap. Well, apparently, you guys get it, too. There is man PMS.
Where? When?
Every 24 hours.
What are you talking about?
Mm-hmm. Apparently, yes, guys.
I told you we were even-keeled.
No. Well, maybe you're just always moody then. Every 24 hours, that'd be a full day, and it just continuously goes on and on and on. No, apparently guys do, every 24 hours, have a mood swing. And you are more moody than women.
Stop accusing me. I feel one coming on.
I'm sure. I think you probably had a couple just while we've been sitting here, probably.
I have a mood swing every 4 hours. It's called being hungry.
Okay.
Well, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's called andropause. At 25, but I guess it's a decrease in production of testosterone and unchecked, and it causes belly fat, hair loss, oily skin, back acne, gas, and bloating, apparently, too. And low
that
libido.
Happens every 24 hours? All of those things?
That's rough.
I guess so.
And what,
maybe
what
it's
was that
not
last,
that noticeable.
What was that last part? Low libido?
Low libido.
So if this is happening
and mood swings.
If this is happening every 24 hours.
It can't be very long.
Then does it necessarily qualify as a mood swing, or does it just mean that, okay, this is what it means to be a guy?
It's called aging. It's just getting older is what it is.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's just a slow declining.
But the oily back hair thing.
Yeah. Well, that's some people experience.
Could you imagine if that was actually really noticeable, though? Like, guys would never get dates or get married or anything.
I don't know. I mean, oily back hair versus pulling a cleaver on your husband and hacking him up in the kitchen because you're on PMS. I think I'd take the oily back hair over that any day of the week.
Yeah, I don't get those symptoms. I don't know many guys
that
do.
Tell yourself that.
I hear. Mm-hmm. I can tell you're upset because you want to think that men also have the same symptoms as women.
No, I think you have it worse is what I'm thinking here reading this. I feel bad for you guys now.
All I'm saying is I'm not mad at you guys for having an episode once a month.
An episode.
I'm not. You know why? Because that's rough. It's rough. Yes, it's a rough thing to go through.
We get all the hard stuff.
Whether or not it's hormonal or not included in it, that's just a rough process to go through. I'd be upset too.
Well, apparently, I'll just let you know, it happens between like 3 and 9 p.m. That's when you'll start to feel this. And then 9 p.m. on, like when you're going to bed.
You were a master, sir.
Yeah.
I was just listening to you at work.
That was
there.
Good stuff.
Wasn't it?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to sympathetic.
Ignore him. I'm not listening.
No, you're not?
No, okay. Just kidding.
Being empathetic to your plight.
No, you are. Yes, okay. Our plight.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not fair.
All right. Now, Erin, we know you love the animals.
I do.
And there's some photographer out there that loves the animals. Or does she?
I can't tell because it's cute. The pictures are very cute. But the animals might not be so happy about it. There's an Australian-based photographer, Serena Hodson, and she takes pictures of dogs. This is her latest series, and she's kind of showing that dogs get emotional, and here's how she does it. She takes a picture when they're all cute and fluffy, and then she dumps them in water and takes a picture when they're probably grumpy. Yes. So the pictures are really cute, though, and it shows that dogs definitely have emotions. But unlike women and men who we get moody, apparently the dog's moods, it might last for like 30 seconds, and then they're happy
they
again.
They forget very
yes,
quickly.
They are happy again.
Yeah.
Because I will say, when I give my dogs a bath, they give you the look while they're getting bathed. And then as soon as they're out, they shake. And then they're like, oh, yeah, I'm clean. This is awesome.
Nervous.
So,
I'm going to go roll around in the backyard.
Yes, or on my bed.
Yeah. Right. And if they do seem a little unhappy, just a little treat and boom, life is new.
See, that's all you have to do with women. Give us a treat.
What?
Every 28 days, give us a nice treat.
Well,
yep.
A cookie.
All right. Like, should we wait till after the shower or before?
Probably after.
Yeah.
Because I think just like dogs, we feel better after that too.
Yeah. All right.
Yes.
Just checking.
I'm much happier.
My dog loves showers or baths. Yeah.
That's good. You're lucky.
You start to fill up the tub and he just jumps in.
Yeah.
He's a freak.
I have a cat that likes him. Not like somebody likes to sit in the shower and then like pat at the water.
Mm. All right. Are we done talking about that?
Unless you want to talk about dog birthday parties, we could go there.
Oh, will you please?
I don't know what you're talking about.
They
do exist.
Erin got an invitation from a dog.
Yes.
Who was throwing a party for a dog. Is that what happened?
Did you just call her friend a dog?
No.
Hey, I have friends that are dogs. Like. I won't lie.
No, actual canine.
Yes. No, it was a canine dog party, birthday party for 8-year-old Zoe, who is a dachshund, and her mom, a human, threw the party.
Oh.
And it was my very first dog party, so I brought my dog as well, Luna.
Mm-hmm.
And there were like 8 dogs and 12 people, and the dogs were running around playing, and the humans were watching them, and they had human food and dog food.
Yeah.
But the greatest part of the whole party was, you know, when there's treats, dogs tend to get a little feisty. They all want the treat.
Yeah.
Well, Zoe had a birthday cake. They put the birthday cake on the floor. All the other dogs just sat and let her eat it.
Are you kidding? Wow.
Not kidding. They knew it was her birthday and that they had to be polite.
How about that?
So about 10 minutes, Zoe had to like lick all the peanut butter off and then they sliced the rest for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they all had their own piece.
Yeah. What did you bring Zoe as a birthday gift?
I did bring gifts. I brought mom a bottle of wine and then I brought Zoe a toy.
Now Zoe's a dachshund?
A dachshund.
Should have brought a little yellow plastic sports car and call it a dachshund 240Z.
Yeah. That's a car joke, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Beep,
you like
beep.
That?
Yes.
Now, speaking of cars, there's a champion fighter out there. He's one of those UFC dudes who's in trouble for something he did with his car. Big, big trouble. And Chris is going to tell you about that. And it wasn't a Dachshund 240Z. Next, here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
How do you stop a killer who won't stay dead? When you mix high-tech medical science with a psychotic killer, you get Immortal Fear, a medical thriller by H.S. Clarke. This book has been described as heart-pounding, captivating, provocative, a modern high-tech version of Frankenstein that explores the line between life and death. Full over-the-top action and adventure with vivid storytelling. Immortal Fear is a fast-paced page-turner. I love thrillers, and this book was amazing.
amazing. I could not put it down, and neither will you. It is riveting, completely engaging, and will have you on the edge of your seat. This is from the best-selling Dr. Paul Power series, which is top-rated on Amazon and is highly recommended for anyone who likes mysteries and thrillers. This is a clever whodunit that is brilliantly written. The ebook is available at Amazon. Immortal Fear, Immortal, a medical thriller by H.S. Clarke.
All right, we love your comments. If you send them to us, we're on Twitter, at Faf Show. We're on Facebook. Like us over there. Leave your comments as well. Phil Hewlett and Friends is the thing to search over there. And we have a contact page at philhewlettandfriends.com where you can just fill out a form and enter your comment there. We will see it. And you can direct your comment to whichever friend you prefer. And one more thing. You can leave us a voicemail. There's a nice little blue tab at the website. Click on that. And if you have a microphone on your computer, your laptop, I think you can even do it on your phone. I've done it on my phone, on my smartphone. Use your smartphone in this case and leave us a little message. And then once you like what you've recorded, you send, you click the send button and we get it in our inbox and we can listen to it.
We should play some of them.
And that's the end of that. Well, maybe I will.
Yeah.
Most of them are private.
Oh.
You know,
oh.
People that want to meet you.
And, oh, okay.
Or Chris.
I was thinking,
Or they want to hurt me.
Oh, okay. That
and
makes
so
sense.
We don't talk about that on the
We don't play the violent ones?
No, we don't want to encourage the bad behavior. But if
Got
you have
it.
Comments about the show or questions about any of us that you think we could answer the question, and maybe we'll play it on the air and make it a little game out of it, right?
That would be fun.
Yeah.
I like that idea.
All right. Now, there's this this guy, perhaps the most prolific mixed martial arts fighter on the planet. He is part of that whole UFC domain. He's a champion, and he's in big trouble, Chris, isn't he?
Yeah, we're talking about UFC light heavyweight champion John Bones Jones, and he is in jail in Albuquerque. He ran a red light and crashed his rental car into a pregnant woman and then ran.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, witnesses say he hit her. He ran, got out of the car, ran for a ways, and if you see the pictures of the cars that had collided, it was quite a collision. The cars were torn up pretty bad. So after the accident, he got out of the car, he ran for a ways, fell to the ground, and then turned around, ran back to the car to grab a handful of cash and some other personal items from the car, and then took off and ran again.
Bad. Was he trying to make a getaway, you think, by grabbing the cash? Like, oh, I can get like a taxi.
Who knows what he was thinking, because he had all kinds of personal effects still in his rental car, even including the rental agreement, which has his wife's name on it. So it's not like he was going to be able to run away from this incident. So what happened is that happened on Monday. Excuse me. Yeah, yesterday during the day. Last night, an arrest warrant was issued. Cops went and got him, threw him in jail, booked him, and now he's going to be facing charges. Now, they're saying that this could have possibly been a misdemeanor until he ran.
Yeah, that doesn't help.
It was turned into a felony, but they also found some drugs and paraphernalia in the car.
Oh,
so
yeah.
How good convenient. Chance it was going to be a felony anyway.
You're supposed to go run and grab that and take off again. I would imagine.
Well, the accident was pretty heavy, and I think that the drugs had sprayed all over the car in a way that you'd have to be there with a pair of tweezers to get it all out of there.
Need a vacuum cleaner.
The pregnant woman, by the way, allegedly only has a broken arm.
That's good.
The UFC itself is being encouraged to take his championship belt away after this incident. He's 24 years old. The guy is he's a great athlete and is inspiring young fighters all over, but you just can't keep his nose clean.
Yeah, wow. I guess not. And so
I'm glad she's okay too.
The whole deal is then if he may not be an evil guy, he may have just made a big mistake. And
yeah, he's a nice guy. If you take what you get when you see somebody at a press conference, you know, you don't really get the behind the scenes of who a person is. But from what you see and what you hear, seems like a pretty down to earth guy.
But as we continue to search for evil people, do we find them at the Bumblebee Tuna Plant?
Well, these people, hard to say whether or not they're evil, Phil, but you do have to hear this story. Bumblebee Foods and two of their managers are being charged by L.A. prosecutors. This happened yesterday. They violated safety regulations when they cooked a coworker in the pressure cooker oven of the plant. Yeah, like cooked a coworker. Here's the background
awful.
On it. A 62-year-old employee was performing maintenance in their 35-foot-long pressure cooking oven. You can imagine it gets a little grimy in there, so you send in one of the guys to clean it up. The coworkers thought he was in the bathroom. They filled the oven with 12,000 pounds of canned tuna behind him and turned it on to the full 270 degrees.
Oh my gosh. Does it say if they have like a safety mechanism? Obviously not for something like there's a human in here cleaning. I mean, there should be something.
That's what they're in trouble for. They didn't follow the safety regulations, which is at a minimum, you would think it's stick your head in and go, hey, is anybody in here?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
And so the guy essentially cooked, didn't he?
Yeah, and you would think at 270 degrees, who knows how slowly this thing heats up, but hopefully it was something that happened quickly. When the supervisor found out he was missing, he made an announcement over the loudspeaker, sent all the employees all over, including the parking lot, to find him. It wasn't until a couple hours after that. That they pulled the pressure cooker door open, and there he was. The two employees faced 3 years in prison and a $250,000 fine.
My goodness.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we need something a little lighter here.
Want some happy
to discuss. How about some happy news? Apparently, there's more of a connection than we ever realized between a sexy voice and a sexy look. And I'm going to throw a preemptive strike out here and say that this entire story is bogus, that whoever they spoke to absolutely lied to them. A new study out of the University of Vienna in Austria, where you'd think they'd know better, had men listen to women's voices, then rate how attractive they think the women are. Then another group of men looked at the women's pictures and also rated their attractiveness. And it turned out men pretty much nailed which voices were connected to good-looking women and which ones were not. The researchers' theory is that maybe attractive facial features, like narrower jaws and fuller lips, translate into voices that sound sexier.
That's not true.
Yeah, completely bogus. And I'll tell you why it's completely bogus. It's because of the industry I've worked in since my voice changed.
Right.
And all the people I've met in radio who work in radio because they are more than talented enough to work in television, but nobody wants to look at that.
Oh, that's so mean.
Like that.
There's some very attractive
radio
people.
I'm just laying it
people.
Out there for you. Yeah, well, sure, there are.
I have seen many.
There
so.
Are, but there are some frightening.
You're looking at two of them right now, too. Sister.
Yeah. Well, I know that. That I did know.
Yeah, but no, I mean.
Like to feed the egos.
You're a very easy to look at woman, and you have a very good gig on the television, okay? But you also have a great voice. Now, there are a lot of women with great voices who who've had jobs in phone sex.
You might, just say it.
Yeah, there are women who would, by the standards here, out of Vienna, wouldn't qualify for the attractive look.
Yeah. By the way, there's a lot of women with pretty awful voices that are really hot.
Yeah, like, and I always thought that
Fran Drescher.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Just one off the top of my head. But
yes.
I always thought that that was generally, if you're going to generalize, that was going to be the case. So if you heard a voice over the telephone that really sounded sexy, you're thinking, okay, four or five bills easily. But if you're if you hear a voice that's scratchy or sounds like there hasn't been a lot of attention to preserving the quality of the vocal cords, then, hey, that might be a bikini model. Let's go.
Yeah. Marge Simpson, one of the hottest TV characters ever.
Yeah, right? Once
she
you get past
hair.
That hair.
No, I like the hair.
Do you like the hair?
I do.
Yeah. Now, they didn't test whether women could guess a man's attractiveness based on his voice, but other studies in the past have found that women gravitate toward men with deeper voices because those guys are generally bigger and stronger.
Well, the one that doesn't fit that, David Beckham, I will say. Good-looking guy.
Yeah.
The voice...
High-pitched voice.
Not the best voice. If you heard him talk, you'd be like, no.
Yeah.
And then you see him, you're like, oh, that's
too
bad.
It's like a pirate. It's like, oi, mate. Hey.
And I like accents. His just doesn't, it's not the good British accent.
No?
No. But he is cute in pictures, as long as he doesn't talk.
Right.
Just stick him in a pair of underwear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Throw him
and
up on a
billboard. And tape his mouth shut. Mm. No, just kidding. Just kidding.
Oh, boy. All right. Fine. So let's see what else we have. Oh, we were talking last week in one of the other episodes about the revival of Full House. Was that you, Chris, or
was that
you?
That was you. I was excited
Aaron.
About that.
Yeah, and the thing is that Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen were asked about it, and they said, well, they didn't know anything about it. Well, John Stamos is calling BS. He got on Twitter this week and talked about Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen. And he said, no, there's no way. They're claiming they didn't know about the upcoming Full House revival on Netflix. But also, Lifetime is doing a tell-all movie about the Full House cast, like the unauthorized Saved by the Bell thing they did last year. And that was all in part of the conversation. So Stamos is calling them out. They had said they were shocked he hadn't called them about it before. Well, on Sunday, Stamos retweeted a link to the story about it and added, quote, "I call BS." And at least two sources told E! News that Mary-Kate and Ashley definitely knew about it beforehand. By the way, tell-all thing, it's called, we don't know the name of it.
I'll watch that, too.
Empty House?
Yeah.
But it'll be the unauthorized Full House story.
So. I watched the Saved by the Bell one, too, so I'll definitely watch that.
Yeah. I'm sure those two girls heard at least the murmurs of it, but I sort of believe it's possible that they are insulated enough to where they're not really getting all the information that goes on in the real world. You're talking, those two kids, yeah, and they're still kids, are literally billionaires.
Yes.
You don't see them anywhere ever anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You don't. They're just gone.
They don't need to be anywhere.
No.
Nor do they want to be. Obviously, they don't have the same craving for attention.
No, they're traveling and managing their business.
Yep. They're making clothes.
Right. But to the degree that they manage their business because they have managers, right?
I'm sure that they have a posse of people around them that you wouldn't even know that they were in the middle of it. And that might be why they're not getting normal news or, you know, normal what's going on.
Right. Well, they've grown up to be lovely ladies, haven't they? They're not little kids anymore.
No, they seem like good adults.
Women.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Not like that other one, Stephanie. What happened to her? She turned into a crackhead.
Wow.
Yeah,
she didn't
do as well.
And her clothing line isn't nearly as good. Yeah.
Great shoes, though.
Hey, so our travel guy, he's more or less been living out of airports for the last 3 weeks or so. And he has a thing or two to say, not all good, about the airports in California and along the west coast of these here United States. And he joins us next to tell all right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. All right, it's Phil Hewlett and Friends, and I don't know about you. When I travel, I kind of enjoy going to the airport. I do. I mean, once I'm inside, I'm in kind of a cool place. When I travel, I like looking around, and usually the airports, they've got memorabilia or some kind of art or something like that. They have a bunch of the crazy places to check out where they're selling stuff that who in the world is ever going to buy it, right? But people do. And then they've got a lot of places to sit down and have a couple of drinks before your plane takes off.
They're not all like that, though. You know, you go to, you're talking about places like maybe John Wayne in Orange County or Minneapolis or San Antonio. There's some really nice ones out there, but a lot of them are sort of just pushing you right through to the terminal and there's not much to do.
Really?
Huh. Yeah.
Must be flying to the wrong places.
Or you're flying out of the right places.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Why not? But one guy that's done a lot of flying in recent weeks is our travel guy, Gary Warner, and I have no clue where he is today. Gary, where are you?
Well, Phil, I'm not too far from John Wayne Airport here in sunny Southern California. Came down to visit my parents for a few days, and I have used, in the past 2 weeks, I've used LAX, John Wayne Airport, Long Beach Airport, San Francisco, Portland. So I got a little bit of a tour of some of the airports recently.
Which one's the best one out of that group?
Let's start out talking about Southern California, because that's where we all have to fly out of. And, you know, the clear big loser here is LAX. LAX is just a mess. There are people who try to do little apologetic things about LAX and all that. But it's really old. It's pinched in. They haven't done anything really to upgrade it significantly other than the international terminal since the Olympics. And it doesn't have a rail line that connects. You basically take the rail line and it stops short of the airport and then you have to get a little shuttle bus. Boy, you get into LAX. Can you imagine flying from like Japan or something like that and getting all the way to LAX and arriving at like 5 p.m. and needing to get down to, say, you know, Irvine?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just
2 hours.
You know, it's horrible. And it looks its age. Most of the areas still look its age. There's some cool spots like the theme building, although it lost its restaurant, the Jetsons Encounter Taiwan there. But, you know, it's really a sad airport, and it's lost a lot of its international reach in terms of where airlines stop on their way maybe between Asia and Europe to San Francisco, which has went from a pretty rundown airport to a really great airport, especially on the international side.
Hmm. Yeah, all right.
So let's talk a little bit about, you know, what's weird is that we don't have one airport. We have this constellation of airports around here.
Yeah, Southern California is what we're talking about, for those of you who've never been here where we are, but let's count them. So you have LAX, you have John Wayne, there's Burbank, and Van Nuys, Ontario. Does Van Nuys count?
Van Nuys doesn't really count now.
All right, but Ontario is another big one in this.
Ontario is a really sad story in that it's owned, actually, it's operated by Los Angeles World Airports, which also owns LAX. And so it's like a little brother that basically keeps on getting turned upside down and having its change shook out.
Yeah.
Basically, the group LAWA, as it's known, always moves pretty much everything to LAX that it can. And Ontario's got this big airport. They put a lot of money about 10 years ago into the terminal, and it's like a ghost town for the most part. You know, it used to be an airport where you could take, you know, flights to Hawaii. There are flights cross country. ATA, which was a budget airline, big out there. But it's a ghost town, and the city has been trying to get back control of the airport so that it can market it and try to find some new spots.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, so
that's really changed the most is Long Beach.
Oh, yeah.
Have you been to Long Beach lately?
Yes, I have. And in fact, the changes that seem to be coming, I'm almost nostalgic for the way the airport was before the changes, even before the changes come, because I don't want it to become a big airport. I kind of like going into a terminal that's got about 7 or 8 desks and a couple of rental car places. Then you go out in the patio and you wait for your plane.
Well, I mean, it was in its heydays, it was great with the restaurant upstairs and everything like that, and the 2 Catalina seaplane airlines, which used to be over there. But I think they've done a nice job, and they've kept the historic, you know, sort of nautical Art Deco terminal out there. But the reality is that JetBlue made Long Beach its first, it was its only West Coast hub, really. And they flew to New York and Boston and everything like that. But as they've grown, they've moved a lot of those flights to LAX. But they do, you know, Portland and, you know, Salt Lake City and a lot of other spots. And the airline basically went to the Long Beach and said, look, if you want us to stay, you know, we can't have an airport where people have to go up these rickety ramps or anything like that. You know, Phil, that's the only airport since 9/11 in which I got on the wrong plane, because those who know Long Beach Airport from, you know, before the recent remodel, you would go through the ticketing office and then you would go out and there was all these ramps.
Yeah.
Well, I just happened to get on the wrong ramp and I ended up getting on a plane to Boston when I was going to Las Vegas.
And nobody was paying attention or keeping track of you and your ticket and your baggage.
It's wild. It's like a bunch of temporary buildings with, like Gary said, ramps, and then it's all almost outside, really protected by temporary guardrails almost.
Right.
It's a wild scene.
But now it's been completely redone. It's a beautiful interior. They've got some great restaurants, some great coffee spots. And they haven't gilded the lily, basically. They know that airlines can be fickle and they can come and go, and so you don't want to spend too much money. That's what's happened in a lot of places like Pittsburgh, which sunk just tons of money into a beautiful airport for U.S. Air, and U.S. Air decided not to have it be a hub anymore.
Yeah.
And you'll find that in other spots around the country.
Yeah, and you got to be careful because some of the smaller airlines get swallowed up by the bigger airlines, and then they move to Chicago or to Dallas or wherever it is.
Or you have a situation like in Long Beach where basically it's all JetBlue, and if JetBlue decides it just wants to do L.A., all of a sudden it's gone. The big problem out in Orange County is that Southwest Airlines now has more than half the flights.
Yeah.
And that's sort of a tipping point. And that what happens there is that other airlines, the Americans and the Uniteds and things like that, they start scaling back and leaving.
Yeah.
So you go there, and there's a lot of space in those 3 terminals.
Let's move up north with the time we have here, Gary, because I like the San Francisco airport. They've got 3 airports to consider up there. There's the Oakland and the San Jose. And I like the San Francisco because you walk out the door, and you jump on the BART, and you go just about anywhere you want to.
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. You know, it's one of those ones where I often stay down. I use my Sheraton points and stay down at the Palace Hotel. And you basically can just get on the BART there and be downtown and then walk over to the ferry building and have dinner. No, it's a great airport. And like I said, it used to be a wreck. They spent a lot of time and money to make this sort of horseshoe-shaped light rail system that is just awesome.
Yeah.
And it's a great airport. Sacramento is a different case. Same with San Jose. Airports that I think during, right before the recession, really decided they wanted to have a world-class, you know, terminal, and they sunk a lot of money into it. I mean, the big deal is I think that Sacramento spent twice as much as John Wayne Airport did to add its third terminal. And they wanted John Wayne Airport to sort of be utilitarian. It looks like the other two, vaulted ceiling and everything like that. But, you know, Sacramento isn't getting those flights that it thought it was going to get.
Yeah. I'll tell you one other airport that's up there is Oakland. And if you think about the Oakland Coliseum, if you've ever been to the Oakland Coliseum and you think, all right, is this a place where I would want to take the wife and kids for a ride at 2 in the morning on a Saturday? And you probably would answer that question with a no. And no. Not far from there is the Oakland airport. And right. I was about an hour and a half early for a flight one day. So I said, all right, well, I'm going to stop somewhere in this park-like city of Oakland, and I'm going to grab a bite to eat. Well, I was driving for an hour and didn't find anything. I said, well, look, there's a Denny's right across the street from the airport. I could go over, sit down on the bar stool and order something real quick, wolf it down, and get out of there. Well, I went inside, sat down on the bar stool, and half an hour later, no one had even made eye contact with me. And so I got up and left because hungry, and I got into my airplane.
At the post office, they don't want you to recognize them.
Right. I mean, has Oakland gotten any better? I mean, they've got an issue with the neighborhood.
I mean, the thing with Oakland is it's the low-cost airport. You know, when things are really expensive over in San Francisco, prices actually have gotten better in San Francisco because they've got a little bit more competition. Southwest is in there. Virgin America, which is an outstanding airline, is over there. Oakland used to be the place when I was going to school in the Bay Area that if you flew into Oakland, you could get a ticket for, you know, half price, you know, compared to San Francisco. They also the international charters would fly out of that, World Airways,
yeah,
like that.
Sure.
But no, it's not a great airport. It's a pretty run-down airport. The great thing about Oakland used to be that you could walk out of the terminal, walk maybe 100 feet, and you're right in the rental car lot.
Yeah.
But after 9/11, they made them move it out, and it is now one of the most distant rental car spots. If you're not familiar with Oakland, maybe you're familiar with Phoenix or Las Vegas. Those are another two where you're talking about you better add a half hour, 45 minutes on getting from one.
Yeah, good luck in Vegas.
Let's talk about one more airport out there, which is Bob Hope Airport.
Yeah.
Okay. Small airport, but it's really sweet, and it's right on the rail line. So you can actually take the train up from Union Station or even from Orange County if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a shuttle that goes over there. Plus, it's you know, it's one of these things. I love these airports that are named after people. Bob Hope Airport.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Sure.
We've got a John Lennon Airport in Britain, in Liverpool, and I flew to George Best from there to George Best Airport, old soccer player in Northern Ireland.
How about that? Well, maybe one day they'll name an airport after you, Gary Warner.
Yeah, well, no. Here's the thing I want to tell.
Yeah.
Is when I die, and you can help with this, I want you to create a plot, and there'll be a headstone, and in front of it will be this white gravel, okay? And on the headstone, it will say, the white zone is for immediate loading and unloading only.
I love that. Gary Warner, a pleasure to speak with you. Where are we going to catch you next week?
You know, it's a little bit up in the air. I'm actually going to be spending some time down. I had planned on being back up in the Northwest. I'm going to be down here for a while, and might be down in La Costa, that area.
Ooh.
It's just
all right. You know,
whatever the wind strikes. I got a lot of free time right now, and I really got a Jones to travel.
I love that. Well, we'll talk to you again next week, and we can't wait to hear from you. What's that?
You going anywhere?
Yeah, I'm going up the street. I'm going to spend all my time either here or in Anaheim for hockey games.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Hey, man, congratulations on that.
Well, thank you very much.
So are you going? So you going to Calgary?
No, I'm not going to Calgary. Calgary's coming here to see me.
Oh, that's good. Well, you know, pretty airy up there.
It certainly is.
You take very good care of yourself, and we'll talk soon. Okay.
All right, Gary. Thank you very much.
Bye.
All right, there he goes. He's our travel guy. And you could tell he's got the Jones. Is that what he said?
He does, yes.
He's jonesing.
Mm-hmm.
He's absolutely jonesing. All right, let me see. Just a quick look at what we have coming up to wet your whistle. We were talking sports a moment ago, and I cannot believe the Clippers are still in the playoffs. And maybe they can, and maybe they can knock off the champions. We're going to talk a little bit about that and a couple of other things that you won't believe next right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing.
Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. All right, it's Phil Hewlett and friends. New survey found that about 40% of women admit they've dug through their friends' stuff in the bathroom.
No.
40%. 33% have gone through their boyfriend's bathroom for evidence that he's cheating.
That one's maybe different.
And 5% admit they've stolen something out of a friend's medicine cabinet.
These are some very honest women. Who's taking these surveys and being so honest?
That's just women.
They didn't ask me because I'd be like, no, no, no.
What, are you kidding? Of course not.
Okay. And what better way to honor your dead husband or boyfriend than making sure he's with you for all of your future sexual adventures? There's a new way to pay tribute to your dearly departed loved one. It's a special sex toy that's filled with his ashes.
That is so wrong.
And if you order one, it also features a perfume spray bottle you can fill up with his old cologne.
Oh, boy. I think you just take pictures and remember them that way.
I'm trying to decide if I'm in favor of taxidermy and just having a comfy chair in the house and leaving your wife or husband in the house, you know,
to decide just how twisted you really are.
I know.
Because I'm not sure I feel comfortable being in the same room as you.
I don't know. I
mean,
I'm
going to
stuff you.
I mean, think about what we do. I mean, we either burn somebody or we put them in the ground in a box.
Yes, that's true. Release them back into the universe.
Yes,
you don't capture them
and
then
Earth
the
again,
and
one
then
with
you,
nature.
Then you go back and you visit the box or you visit the urn. Or you stand out on the pier and wave at the ocean if their ashes were scattered in the sea. Now, why not, if you're doing that, why not just go all the way with your precept there and put her or him in an easy chair in your house?
Okay, so let's take this a step further if you want to go down this road. So, Phil, do you change the clothes periodically?
Oh.
Of the individual that you have stuffed in your living room?
I suppose you'd have to do that.
Maybe around holiday time, you put them in a little bit of a Santa outfit.
Sure.
No, you have to do the holiday sweater that's horrible to look at.
And then do you just string Christmas lights around them as you're putting them up around the rest of the house?
Now, clearly it's an issue because people would be uncomfortable if they came in the house and they saw...
Well, no. What do you do? Do you stick them in the closet then when people are over?
But all I'm saying is that we're comfortable with...
Just slide them under the bed.
With our current process because we've been doing it for so long.
Yeah, but there's something really wrong with stuffing your wife or husband and
there's wrong with the whole thing from the beginning, what you were talking about with the ashes and the perfume. It's
That's
all twisted.
Too.
Is that wrong?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It's not my idea.
I'm
is that
spray
wrong?
Spray him all over my
All
neck.
I'm doing
Ooh,
is throwing
no.
it out there for you to, you know, to question your standards.
Mm. Yeah.
And your understanding of norms. Right.
I'm going to turn the diamond ring that you can make out of your loved one. That was a while
okay.
back.
Hey, that's a thought. That's not a bad idea.
All right.
You take their ashes, you make it into a ring.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you hit this danger zone in your conversation, you immediately say, let's talk sports. How are the Clippers doing?
The Clippers are doing well enough to still be in the playoffs. You know, and they're facing a very tough team, the defending champion San Antonio Spurs.
Yeah. Only game 5?
Yeah. That boggles you, huh?
It does because, you know, hockey playoffs started around the same time as the NBA playoffs, and we're already done with the exception of one series that's gone to the 7th game, and they're already done with the first round.
Yeah, and you guys are going back and forth to Canada in a lot of cases.
Exactly true.
But a lot of the games are close to ending. The series with the Spurs and the Clippers is one of the most watched series, and it was put basically last game viewed on the first day, and it's the last game viewed on every
Money,
set
ratings,
of series.
Yes.
It's the highest ratings getter in the playoffs. So anyway, they're tied 2-2. San Antonio won 1 here. We won 1 there. But here we all come back home to L.A.,
Go
tied 2-2. Yeah, I agree with you. Go Clippers. So it's essentially a 3-game series.
Yep.
And 2 of the games are at Staples Center.
All right. Well, think they can pull it off?
Of course, yeah. They're one of the most talented teams in the NBA.
All right.
Just got to keep their head straight.
Good, good, good. You know, I teach a college class here and there, mm-hmm. and sometimes some of the students have their heads screwed on correctly. Others, they don't. And some of them try real hard to fail. Now, the school doesn't like when all the students fail. They'd rather have better grades, and then somehow it's the professor's fault if mm-hmm. the students try real hard to fail. But there's this one professor who just, he had it. He's thrown up his hands because the students were such idiots. Isn't that right?
Apparently, yes. At Texas A&M in Galveston, there is a professor there, and he said he wanted to fail his entire class of 36 or so students, but the school will not let him. But here's why he did it. He or says he wanted to. I guess he said he's caught them cheating. He's been told to chill out, get out of my space, go back and teach, mm-hmm. things like that. They've called him names to his face. And so he's had enough of it. So he told the school he wanted to fail them all, and they said no. And so now they removed him from teaching the class, and they have somebody else teaching for him.
Yeah, but he's just trying to teach a lesson, a life lesson, by failing everybody.
Yeah, I'm down. I think kids need to learn lessons.
You learn more from your failures in life than you do from your successes. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's always been one of the basic tenets of life, hasn't it?
Yeah, this guy sounds like he might not be completely in touch with the younger generation either and how to deal with them. If they were disrespecting him to that level,
you get a timeout.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes you could just be so out of touch that you're not going to gain any respect.
Maybe all of the students in his class have synesthesia.
Synesthesia? If they did, they'd be excelling.
Yes, why is that? Did I pronounce it correctly?
Yeah, I don't even know what it is.
Synesthesia is something that researchers say 15% of the entire world's population has. It's a cross-sensory phenomenon that allows some to hear colors and taste sounds.
Blue flavor's the best.
I don't even know how that's possible.
So, for example, you might see a color when you hear someone mention a name to you. Like every time someone mentions Chris, you might see red.
Oh, no.
For passion.
Oh, never mind. That's not what I was
going to go. Or you might get a particular taste in your mouth when you hear certain words. One woman actually paints the music that she sees, and they are some wild-looking paintings. So if you just look up synesthesia, you'll probably see this woman and her crazy paintings. Scientists say that's just the way that their sensory systems work, but it is definitely real. It happens. It's usually genetic, and you'll have it for life. So
that is something that is weird.
Synesthesia.
I'm not among the 15%, but I'm a little envious.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, just to repeat, if you text the word MED to 80888, $10 will be charged to your phone bill, and that money will go to help the survivors of that devastating earthquake in Nepal and surviving and surrounding areas. Just spectacular. Death toll is well past 5,000 today, and who knows where it is when you're listening to this podcast. So open your heart and help out. Hey, we love your comments. On our website, there's a contact page. On Twitter, we're at Faf Show. Like us on Facebook. Thanks to our executive producer, Mike Stark, our producer, Brooke Peterson. Our production assistant is Ryan Hayden. For Aaron Myers and Chris Martin, I'm Phil Hewlett. Can't wait to talk with you next time right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com.